Irish men and Irish women. In the name of God and of the dead generations from which she receives her old tradition of nationhood, Ireland, through us, summons her children to her flag and strikes for her freedom. We declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destinies to be sovereign and indefeasible. The long usurpation of that right by a foreign people and government has not extinguished the right, nor can it ever be extinguished, except by the destruction of the Irish people.
Well, if you ask any Irish person to identify the most potent symbols of the Easter Rising, they'll probably point to the GPO and the Proclamation of the Republic. And one of our most iconic images of 1916 is of Patrick Pearse reading that proclamation outside the GPO. But did he actually do it? A new book claims that, in fact, Pearse probably did not read the proclamation and that it wasn't read outside the GPO at all. I'm joined by historian Anne Matthews, author of The Irish Citizen Army, and Ruaidhrí O'Donnell of the University of Limerick joins us from our Limerick studio. You're both very welcome indeed. Anne, what is the evidence? Because we have been brought up on the assumption, or at least the holy writ, whatever you want to call it, that Pearse read the proclamation. Some say on the steps of the GPO, even though the GPO doesn't have any steps. How did you arrive at the conclusion, or at least how do you advance the possibility that he didn't read out the proclamation, on steps or otherwise?
Well, I came across it almost accidentally when I was doing my PhD, when I was publishing Renegades. I went with the given story that Patrick Pearse read the proclamation at the GPO. And I read everything anyone had to say about it that was published, and everybody was agreed that he did. And then when I was doing some research for the Irish Citizen Army story, and I came across a newspaper called the Dublin Saturday Post, which no historian appears to have used. I didn't know about it myself until about 5 or 6 years ago. And it had a wonderful account, an amazing account of what happened in that 6 days. And I believe also it's the paper on which John O'Casey based his Plough in the Stars. And the reporter is J.J. O'Leary, and he gave a moment-by-moment, time-by-time account of everything that happened in O'Connell Street. And he described, at 1:30, they came from the post office, a small man in plain clothes with a bundle of papers under his arm. Escorted by a guard of revolutionaries, he made his way to Nelson's Pillar and began to speak, surrounded by not more than 30 men. And he said, "Citizens of Dublin, the last of the public buildings of the city is now in our hands. We've captured the General Post Office, and on this Memorial Day, Ireland, as a republic, has freed herself from the Republic of England." And then he says the speaker went on to read the proclamation, and the newspaper printed the proclamation.
Okay, a small man in plain clothes does not sound like Patrick Pearse. He was not particularly small, he was not wearing plain clothes. He was wearing a uniform, a very distinctive uniform.
He was.
During Easter week.
He was. And James Connolly was a small man, but he was wearing the Citizen Army serge green uniform. To me, that's Tom Clark. And it makes sense. Now it makes sense, having read this, Tom Clark was the old Fenian.
He was the link.
He was the absolute living link. Whereas in 1915, Pearse talked about the dead generations and the dead Fenians. Here they have a living link. And it made sense that they gave him the honour of reading the proclamation. It also makes sense, it makes more sense, that they read it at Nelson's Pillar, because the GPO was simply that, the GPO. It was a public building, it was open because it was Bank Holiday Monday, but nonetheless not an important building or iconic building. But Nelson's Pillar was iconic. And those words, where we have separated ourselves from the Republic of England, it makes sense that it would have happened at Nelson's Pillar.
And do we know, was Tom Clark wearing civilian clothes that week?
He was. He was not in uniform.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I would have expected. Ruan, what do you make of this? Do you think that it is possible that somebody other than Pearse actually read the proclamation?
Well, I think the balance of probability is no. But I say this with total interest in Anne's theory, which I think is important. There are no sacred cows in Irish history. We need to get into and reevaluate all of these things. It must be pointed out, of course, that it's not simply that historians have claimed that Pearse did it. For decades, it was assumed and reported and printed that he did. which means that for decades, none of those present at any of these events took any issue with that. That's one point. It's also significant that several documents were read in several locations, and it may be that Anne has found yet another one. I would be amazed, for instance, if it was Tom Clark, although I'd like to think it was, and her logic is perfectly sound, because Kathleen Clark, a famously zealous and loyal devotee of her martyred husband, was extremely committed to ensure that he was not done out of any praise. Skellig, J.J. O'Kelly, has an account. I don't believe he witnessed it, but his account is typical of the contemporaneous. By 1 o'clock, the proclamation of the Republic was read aloud by P.H. Pierce. And he goes on to say, very honestly, its chilling reception by those within earshot saddened the hearts of listeners and of spectators who longed for Irish freedom. Now, the guy who's the real authority of the proclamation in terms of its production and aspects of its utilisation is John O'Connor, in his very fine work, The 1916 Proclamation. He says, for instance, that shortly after noon, Pádraig Pearse, to be precise, standing beneath the High Portico, read the proclamation publicly. Now, if that's not true, I'm very surprised it hasn't been comprehensively contradicted. But can I make one more point before you come in?
Absolutely.
It is also the case that Pearse read a second document on the Tuesday, the following day, right? And this is the one that the amended notes of Dermot Lynch, who was an eyewitness and a participant, provided an important issue. In the amended form, it's not just the date of it that's amended from Monday, in other words, the first day to the second, Tuesday, in the manuscript. It's also the title. The Elysian covers 7 or 8 words, probably, and someone could probably estimate that, and it's replaced with handwritten words, Manifesto to the Citizens of Dublin. This is about the Tuesday. Now, that is the Provisional Government to the Citizens of Dublin, the second document, which is endorsed P.H. Pierce, Commanding-in-Chief of the Force of the Irish Republic and the President
and
of the
Republic. And that's the document that Dermot Lynch, in his witness statement to the Bureau of Military History, is talking about. That's the event that he's talking about, not the reading of the proclamation.
In the original version, he's referring, I believe, by the basis of Monday and the correction to the proclamation. In the final version, which he's worked on, it's page 4 of his supplementary statement on the events of Easter week, it's changed to Manifesto to the Citizens of Dublin. However, it doesn't contradict anything because he's nothing to say about the proclamation per se, what we call the proclamation, whereas other contemporaries did.
Now, the timing is interesting here because you talk, Rowan, about evidence that about Skellig, about J.J. O'Kelly talking about Pearse reading the proclamation at noon. This statement here from the Dublin Saturday Post refers to this proclamation, or the small man in plain clothes reading this bundle of papers at 1:30 in the afternoon. So they could be two separate events, couldn't they?
Moreover, we have to bear in mind there is no authoritative actual contemporary record. This is a scattered affair by hundreds, if not thousands, of people and spectators. Skellig says by 1 o'clock. Lynch, in his original verse, says about 12:45. He originally was talking about Monday, he changed that to Tuesday. So we have to bear in mind there's a huge amount of chaos of war. But one further point, the reading of the proclamation by Pearse is additionally logical due to his near obsessive adherence to the legacy of the continuity principle of Robert Emmet. That's what Robert Emmet did on the 23rd July 1803 outside the Thomas Street Depot. And similarly, Emmet's second in command, Philip Long, had also issued a document to the citizens of Dublin, which is precisely what Pearse did. So there's an internal Republican ideological logic to what went on.
This is the only account where somebody says very clearly a man came out and read the proclamation. And the man I am saying is Tom Clark. He did address the citizens of Dublin. And it also makes sense that if you want to draw a line from Emmet, well, then Clark is a link between Emmet and Pearse.
Oh, I agree with you entirely. Yeah. It's just Thomas McDonough apparently also read the proclamation in Jacob's Factory, right? So there's a lot of things going on in a lot of places. That's not very well known. It may not even be satisfactorily established in fact. I think we're going to find, as more accounts come out of the woodwork in private papers and private memoirs, that we will get a bigger picture beyond the BMH.
Okay, well, at the very least, the fog of war has cast some doubt on who did or did not read the proclamation, Anne.
Yeah, I am not rejecting the existing narrative, I am questioning the existing narrative.
Fair enough. Okay, you were also questioning the existing narrative when it comes to whether or not the proclamation was read out to the rebels before they went to the volunteers, before they went into action on Easter Monday 1916. You don't think it was. You say it wasn't.
Yeah, I was working through the Citizen Army, I was a lecture given by Brian Hanley, who made an absolutely cogent point that the only people who knew what was in the proclamation when they left Liberty Hall were the leaders and the printers, because it was such a secret document, they couldn't allow anybody to possibly leak it overnight. So when they marched out from Liberty Hall, most of those men and the women did not know what was in the proclamation. It was read after they had gone out and taken positions.
Are you suggesting, therefore, that if they did not have the proclamation read to them, that they didn't really know what they were fighting for? Surely they knew what they were fighting for. They knew what they were there for.
Well, I think the hundreds of people who were interned and released on the basis that they didn't know what they were doing and they didn't know they were going out to form a revolution, and the fact that they were released says a lot.
If they didn't know what they were doing after the St. Patrick's Day manoeuvres, they were definitely in the wrong place. I think they absolutely knew what they were doing. In the case of McDonough's reading of the proclamation, inside Jacob's factory, people were given the opportunity to leave if they wanted to. But you would have been pretty damn naive not to realise that by assembling on that particular occasion, in defiance of the countermanding order, that something was afoot.
Yes, absolutely, something was afoot. But they still did not get to hear or have the proclamation read to them before they left, which is my point. That's my point.
And does that, in any sense, as far as you're concerned, Anne, delegitimise what happened?
No, it doesn't legitimise anything. It's simply, here is the narrative. And they didn't know when they marched out that this was what was in this document. They discovered in the aftermath of the event, if you like, once they took the positions.
Okay.
That's simply what I'm saying.
If we accept the premise that they didn't know what was in the document, surely, Ruan's point is correct. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were there
for. Well, we've been told over the decades that it was an absolutely secretive event. Apart from Liberty Hall and what was happening in Liberty Hall, the marching, everything that they were doing, the bringing in of arms that they tried to bring in down in Kerry, all of that, yes, they were working towards an object, but everybody didn't know. Every people knew bits and pieces, but nobody had the whole story.
Well, is that not the case with revolution? A very small number of people.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea, particularly given the Irish experience of revolution, that everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah. But this is not about whether they did or did not agree with the revolution before or afterwards, or whenever they heard the proclamation. What I'm saying is the proclamation, which we are being told it was the most important document, and they marched out to fight and die for this document. They didn't, because they didn't know what was in it until after they'd marched out. That's my point. I'm not saying it legitimises or delegitimises anything. I'm not using any of that language.
Ruan, final word?
Well, I agree with Anne. She's literally correct there. They couldn't have known it was the proclamation. Only a handful in the inner circle did. But I'm sure that they accepted its tenets, and the fact that others continued to rally to the positions in the aftermath of the proclamation being distributed is quite telling.
Anne Matthews and Ruan O'Donnell, many thanks for joining us. And The Irish Citizen's Army by Anne Matthews is published by Mercier Press.